And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman alongside News Channel 5. Here live at Bridgestone Arena. We're inside Jack Daniel's Barrel House. Of course, that means tonight it's the Predators hosting the Anaheim Ducks. This is the second game of this four-game homestand. They got it done with another shutout over Dallas on Tuesday. Pekka Rinne, his 50th career shutout, and he is having quite the season and should absolutely be in the Vezina discussion, but it'll be the Ducks. Rematch of last year's Western Conference Final. Steve, how you doing?
Great. You sound phenomenal, by the way.
Well, I sound better than I did Tuesday night. Now, it's 10:02, so we've been on the air about a minute, so we'll see. We'll check back.
Okay. You got four hours.
I was going to say, we do have to make it at 2 o'clock.
You got a pregame, intermission, and postgame to get to tonight as well. So pace yourself, but it's great to have you back.
It's good to be back. And I told our first guest, who's already arrived at the desk, I know this is the earliest we have ever talked. Eric Stevens, who covers the Ducks for the Orange County Register, is with us. Eric, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. I'm starting to wonder. I'm here early enough, maybe too early. I'm wondering if I didn't have enough, a good enough time here last night.
That's a good point.
Exactly. I should be sleeping off something, huh?
Yeah.
This is 8:02 Pacific time, so, yeah.
What's the deal with that?
Yeah, usually we're having a lot of late-night hockey discussions, but, yeah, we're not the only team that has the flu anymore for the road teams. It looks like Vegas has infested some flu on some folks this year. So let's start there, Eric, because here, especially early on, now that the Predators have kind of taken control a little bit of the division right now, currently the number one seed in the Western Conference, they've won 9 in a row, things have really calmed down, but especially early on, people were upset because I was here day one, 1998, and it certainly didn't look like that in 1998, and David Poile, we've talked to, he didn't have those advantages, but I've tried to give Vegas credit because I think McPhee and Gallant have handled it. They set up their roster the way they wanted to run it, and they've executed it. You still have to do everything just because you had advantages, but people were upset because no one's been able to come into the league and have those type of advantages. Because you guys are right there in that division and Vegas has pretty much dominated the entire way, what's been – the word in your neck of the woods about Vegas coming into the league like this?
You know what? I think some of that discontent that you've either felt or heard or whatsoever, I think a lot of that is more fan-generated. This new team that comes in, Bill Foley pays $500 million and, he gets to buy a great team right off the bat. No, you still got to put in the work, Of course, there were some advantages. Yes, that they had advantages that Nashville, Anaheim, Florida, Columbus didn't have. Let's be real about that. But again, they were taking one player off of every team. They weren't taking five or six. They weren't taking the best player off of every team. Obviously, the other 30 are going to protect the best that they have. So. They were taking guys that, by and large are complementary players, even the best ones. James Neal, sniper, 20, 30 goal scorer whatsoever. You wouldn't put him in the Hart Trophy conversation. These were complimentary guys.
Nobody
second
could see
liners, third liners.
Nobody could see this season coming.
No, and that's the thing. What they did was, like you alluded to, they put together a roster that they wanted to be competitive with. And the competitive with is it was based on speed. Right off the bat, they got players that would skate and work. And that attitude was there. I mean, frankly, it was there in training camp. I remember when Vegas came to Anaheim for a game. Yeah, it's preseason. You don't draw many conclusions from that. But it was interesting. I saw, though, a team right there. It's almost like their identity was built right then and there. And I wouldn't be surprised if Gerard Gallant, made that so from day one and every single player bought in. And you know what? It's a perfect storm, too. You got players that, say, that their teams, quote-unquote, didn't want, you know.
Right, they played that up.
We know, quote unquote, okay.
Cast-offs.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got a coach that was a cast-off from Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, we all remember that taxi
incident. Unfairly.
Right. So, yeah, it's sort of a perfect storm that was at work, where you've got a lot of people with something to prove, and they all got it together. And, you know, I mean, just right off the bat, and, you know, even the tragic situation in Las Vegas at the start of the year with the, you know, with the shooting incident or whatsoever, it was just another thing to rally around, you know, for that entire group. And, you know, they took the league by storm.
Anaheim is a big, heavy team. We know the style. And the Predators had to adapt last year. Chicago was one series. St. Louis became more like the Anaheim series. Physical, heavy, hitting. You brought it up. This is where the league is. It's not it's where it's going. It's where it is, as you know. It's all about speed. Let's get some more speed, and then let's get some more speed. I mean, look at the New Jersey Devils, who are in here on Saturday night. They will be here on Saturday. We all remember their glory days. It wasn't like it looks like now. It wasn't about speed. And they have gone a totally different direction, of course. Where did their front office come from? Nashville.
Yeah.
But the league is there. So how much do you think right now that is being talked about behind closed doors? Like, have we built the – I mean, you've got a lot of talented players. Anaheim's had a lot of success. But they haven't been building this thing to where it is now. How much is that discussed?
You know, it's interesting that you say that. Like you said, the way the league is going, and Anaheim sort of runs counter to that. They're sort of still of the belief that, you know, that brawn and physical play and kind of imposing your will on teams is something that plays well when you get to the playoffs. And that's where, as you hear and as you've seen, where a lot of people say that if the Ducks get in, they're going to be tough to handle because they play a playoff style of hockey where it just gets ramped up and it gets physical. I mean, we saw how brutal it was, you know, during those six games last year. You know, but Randy Carlyle, Bob Murray, the GM, they're still – they see where the league is going, and there have been ways where, you know, with certain roster decisions, particularly with their younger players, they have incorporated more speed into their lineup. But they're still staunch believers that, you know, when push comes to shove, they're going to be the ones that are going to apply, you know, the hits and whatsoever. And their ideology is that at some point, it's going to wear teams down. It hasn't gotten them to the promised land, just yet. So, but it again. They're a team that's built for playoff hockey, and they, at least right now, they seem to be gearing up their game toward that, and they're on a real nice run here, and are kind of finally starting to be the team that we all thought they might be.
Have you liked the moves they've made? Whether it was earlier in the year, around the deadline, have you liked what they've done?
You know, yes and no. I mean, particularly the Adam Henrique move. I mean, that – in some ways, that almost salvaged their season. I mean, they were so beaten up by injuries. You know, Kessler and Getzlaff were both out for extended periods. In fact, Kessler was out for the whole first half of the year. They needed somebody in that center hole, you know, to be, you know, productive. And, you know, they had a couple of journeymen or a couple of, you know depth guys that were filling the top two center spots in that lineup. I mean, that's great to, you know, you might be able to survive for a week or two, but you can't survive, you know, over, you know, a month, 2-3 months. So that has worked out tremendously because Henrique is, I mean, not only has he been a great player at both ends of the ice, but he's been scoring. I think he's got 16 of his 20 goals since coming to Anaheim. He's really found his scoring touch again. You know, and really that was a trade that kind of worked out for both teams because Sammy Vatanen is starting to really make an impact with New Jersey. But, you know, the deadline moves are interesting. They brought in Jason Chimera. They signed Chris Kelly. They got older.
Yeah.
You know, they got older, and they're betting on experience there. You know, in fact, I think they're the oldest team in the league now, average age-wise.
Are they too old? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, if you talk to some fans, sure. Yeah, they'll say, you know, I mean, it definitely raised eyebrows. But those two players, they've played that fourth line role throughout their entire careers. So, you know, they know their roles. And they still have their wheels. You know, it's not like, you know, these are 37, 38-year-old guys who totally look it on the ice. I mean, they can skate. You know, Jason Chimera has long been one of the fastest skaters in the league. You know, so they just wanted to be bigger, more competitive, and, you know, they're betting on experience.
Eric Stevens, Orange County Register, here with us. He covers the Ducks, who are, of course, here at Bridgestone Arena to take on the Predators. I'm a little curious about that because I think when the Preds sort of built this team, they looked at the Blackhawks and said, who's the team in the division we have to ultimately catch up with? And a lot of it was about catching up with the speed and the skill that the Hawks have, and obviously the Preds have infused that into their roster. The Ducks go out 2 years ago in Game 7 of the first round against the Predators, and then last year in the Western Conference Final. How much of these moves and some of the way they've built this team is about eventually having to face the Predators again in the postseason, or has that not been at all the philosophy? Because I guess they don't know that will actually happen.
Well, you know, I think whether they would face Nashville specifically or so, you know, I'm not sure if that necessarily, you know, is the plan. I think adding those two guys that I just talked about, I think maybe that plays into some of that a little bit, just in terms of just adding some veteran depth. But the Henrik move, I mean, that was the big move. Because you got Getzlaff back, you got Kessler back. Now they're able to go Getzlaff, Kessler, Henrik, you know, through the middle. You know, they've got a fourth liner in Derek Grant who spent some time here and has actually played really well. But when you go 1-2-3 with those guys, that's what you want to match up with in the postseason. Postseason is about matchups, particularly at center. You know, particularly with. Your top four on defense, you know, going up against you know, the other opposition's top forwards or so, they feel like at least they have the boxes checked off in the main areas, which is goaltending, obviously with Gibson, which is their top four led by Hampus Lindholm and Cam Fowler, and then like I mentioned, the center depth there where they can go up. Against Ryan Johansson, a Mike Fisher, I'm blanking, and Kyle Turris, obviously. So it's about matchups when you get to the playoffs, and I think they feel like they do have the boxes checked off in the main areas.
Plenty of veterans there, no question about it. But one of the young guys that I certainly was waiting to break out, and it seems like he has over the last week or two, Rickard Rakell. How important is his game coming along to what this team can ultimately be?
Well, he's become a little bit more of an all-around player. I mean, he had 33 goals last year.
Sure.
He really broke out last year. Like you alluded to it, I mean, he's on a real hot stretch. His goal scoring, which that's the case with a lot of goal scorers, you know, they can go cold for 7, 8, 9 games and then just heat up, you know, at the drop of a hat here.
He missed some time in the series, did he not?
Well, you think back, you know, to last year. I mean, he missed. He got hurt in Game 5.
Yep.
Didn't play in Game 6. I mean, this was a beaten group. You know, in particular, when you got to the end of that series there. So yeah, he's critical, obviously, to their hopes. And you know, the way that they're going now. I mean, Rakell's going. Getzlaff is putting up points. That big line has like 20 points you know, over the last, I think, 4 games or so. That's what it comes down to. You know, the best players got to be the best players. You know, in crunch time.
Have they found Paul Kariya's rings yet? The Hall of Fame, Eric.
I don't believe so.
That's
you probably know more than I do on
By
that.
By the way, he was just here.
Yeah, he
recently,
was.
And it was great. He came up here and did the show with us. He then came back that night, did pregame. They trotted him around all night. And it's as happy as I've ever seen him.
Isn't
and it's
it
not
great?
That, yeah. Not that he wasn't a happy guy, but, you know, you covered him.
Isn't it great to see him out there?
Yes, because he just disappeared. And he was so happy and so enjoyable to be around that day, all day. I was around him, and he looked incredible, in great shape.
It looks like he can get out there and you know, maybe score a few, huh?
Eric, still. He admitted that when he did the alumni game, that was the first time he had laced him up in 7 years.
Ooh, wow. It's amazing. Yeah. It's hard to believe. And you look at him, and it's like, you know, he could have played, you know, yesterday.
Right.
And as we know, I mean, he told us, you know, at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony that, you know, he would have, if not for the concussions or whatsoever, I mean, he would have still been playing until, you know, he decided, you know, to hang him up. But, yeah, it's been terrific seeing him out there. You know, he's been a private guy all this time, you know, and people have respected that. But, you know, I think when you get to see him and get to know him, and whatsoever, you see that he really is a tremendous guy, worldly guy. I mean, you can talk a number of different subjects with him, you know. But it's good to see. You hope that at one point or whatsoever, he may decide that he wants to get back into hockey at some point.
I hope
he does. And I think the league would heartily welcome his.
No question. In fact, I felt that way that night. I was like, is this a sign that maybe he's ready to get back in some capacity, somehow, some way?
He won't say it, you know, he wouldn't say it, but you definitely got the feel like over the course of the year, there's an element of closure, you know, that's taken place. Whether, you know, whether it's minor, you know, whether, you know, how he had to leave the game, you know, the things with, you know, concussions and whatsoever that's, you know, certainly bothered him. I mean, he was, you know, impacted directly, you know, by it. But, yeah, you wonder and you hope that maybe he's kind of dipping his toe, you know, in here and seeing, you know, just how public he, you know, he wants to be.
Yeah.
It's up to him.
I got him to tell – he's done a lot of surfing. I got him to tell me a surfing story. I said, you have to have a shark story. He said, yeah, one time I saw a big dark shadow in the water. I paddled up to it and realized it was a 16-foot great white. I said, I got out of there. I was like, oops. Yeah, you think?
He's pretty matter of fact about it too, huh?
Yeah, he said that was a pretty dumb decision. But he goes, that's the last time I've paddled up to a big shadow in the water. Hey, good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Dan.
It.
Eric Stevens does a tremendous job covering the Anaheim Ducks. Of course, that's the Predators' opponent tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you at 6 o'clock. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. We'll come back with more here next. Good stuff. Eric Stevens, Orange County Register. Gotten to know him a lot over the last several years because for whatever reason, these two teams keep getting together for some pretty memorable series. Luckily, it's gone the Predators' way. And quite honestly, Steve, I wouldn't be shocked if it isn't a first-round matchup. I wouldn't be shocked. I don't think it's going to be. If you're asking me today, this is my – I told people this off the air. My gut is telling me, and the last time my gut was telling me something, I told you, I admitted, I've been working out. It's gone down. It hasn't been as sharp as it's been in the past. My gut is telling me I wouldn't be surprised if it's not Dallas. The team we saw here Tuesday night is their first-round matchup. But I also wouldn't be surprised if it isn't Anaheim. And I don't think that's a matchup you want in the first round. Just because not – that you can't beat them. Like I said, the Predators, it's the one opponent that they've had their way. They've had tons of playoff success against, but it's just what they do to you.
It's the toll that it takes to get through the series. I told Willie yesterday, Darren, that I watched the game on Tuesday night against the Stars, and I thought, man, what a brutal way to start the playoffs if it's Dallas and the way they're going to play against you, and then you go against the Jets. I mean, I think the Preds are the favorites against both of those teams, but just to get through those two rounds, what kind of a toll might that take on you when you ultimately have two more rounds you have to go through? And he kind of reminded me that, well, what if it's the Ducks? And that's the star situation on steroids, just because, right. As Eric says, when push comes to shove, the Ducks are the ones that are going to be doing the shoving. And the Preds aren't going to back down from that, obviously, and they've had success against them the last couple of years. In a lot of ways, I think the Predators are sort of Anaheim's kryptonite because they can lean on them as well, but yet they just have so much more speed. And attack ability, I think, basically compared to them. But it just – I'm with you. I don't think that's the matchup you want to see, not because you don't think you can beat them, but just because how many bodies – we talk about the depth now. You're going to need the depth by the end of that series because the track record just shows that you're going to lose guys when you go up against them.
You know, there are certain people in sports that we've been around or haven't been around, but you just know they just have it where even when their playing days are over, you know their star is so bright they can do whatever they want to do. Paul Kariya is one of those, but he's just not – he's not wired that way. Peyton Manning, the reports out there that, both ESPN and Fox are willing to give him $10 million a year to be in the booth. Peyton Manning is probably the poster child, and because I've been saying it for years, and it's not like I've broken any new ground. Everybody knows this. He can do whatever he wants to do. I mean, it's up to him. Does he want to own? Does he want to be in a front office? Does he want to coach? Which I don't think that's a route he would ever go. But just name it. What does he want to do?
Yeah.
And if he wants to do this,
he's going to get paid well for it.
He'll be a rock star, but – there's a reason they're offering him $10 million because he'll be worth every penny of it because he will help their ratings.
Oh, there's no question about that.
You've seen the ratings for years. It wasn't a coincidence that the team that was always nipping at the Titans' heels in the ratings in this market was either the Colts or the Broncos.
Absolutely. And it was all because of number 18. That is the only reason is because he was playing.
They were always the second game, always. Just sometimes barely behind the Titans.
Well, and, you know, sometimes people would get mad at us, but very few, because we would, you know, a game that really mattered to the Titans would be in the second slot after their game, and we'd still be showing the Broncos. And every once in a while, somebody would get mad at us for that, but the proof was in the pudding. When we looked at the ratings on Monday and the Titans got a 22 or whatever, the second highest thing of the week would be the Broncos game, and it would get like a 19.
I was going to say a 19 or 20, yeah.
You know, it's right there in the ratings. So Peyton Manning is a phenomenally gifted athlete, obviously, but his personality has endeared himself to so many people, which is why he's worth $10 million to these networks. The interesting thing is if he actually decides to do this, Darren, where do you go? If you have the option to go to either spot, do you go to that Monday Night Football booth where, yeah, it's Monday Night Football and you're unopposed, or do you go to Fox where you're in an afternoon slot, but
then you're not the number one. You're not going to be the number one team.
Well, maybe at some point. I mean, does he move in front of Aikman at some point?
I don't know. That's good.
Does he go to the number two team? For a while, anyway.
Is he with Buck, or does Aikman stay with
Buck? See, that's a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
And Fox would give you the opportunity to call a Super Bowl at some point if you were on the number one team. So there's a lot to decide there. The other thing that's interesting to me is the transition of Tony Romo. He was phenomenal this year. And that's the other thing that I wonder if that plays at all a factor into it in, one, Romo set a pretty high bar for recent guys coming out of the game. And two, does he look at it and say, man, he did that or he made it look pretty easy. Maybe it's time for me to go do that.
Peyton Manning, this is what we know about Peyton Manning. It doesn't matter what they pay him. I mean, he's going to get paid, but it's not like he needs any money. I mean, he's made $400 or $500 million while he played and since then. I mean, I think didn't he just sell off his – Papa John's. I mean, he's got more money. He doesn't have to do another thing the rest of his life, and he's set for life. But the reason they're willing to pay him $10 million is because he is a – look, we have gone over everything, and it's a long list. It's not just one thing. That's what we need to understand and accept, that this ratings decline where there's been like this dip year after year, and in some cases a big dip in the NFL, but it's going the wrong direction last several years. I think Peyton Manning is definitely on that list. Like, you can say protest and anthem and, you know, we can go through all that stuff.
Well, it certainly is in this market just because of the ratings Peyton we talked Manning, about. That second game's not getting 19s anymore.
No.
You know?
So Peyton Manning is a part of that list. I mean, he is, I think there's sure. And when Tom Brady walks away, he is going to affect their ratings. And Drew Brees walks away. He's going – those guys, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, they make you turn into a game. And when they're gone, that will affect their ratings.
Those guys are superstars. because of what they've done numbers-wise and all of that, and the length of their careers, is there anyone coming up in the NFL, you know, or any of these young quarterbacks? You say Aaron Rodgers, and I certainly think he's in that mix, but he's also – he's in his 30s now too. Is there anybody in that 20s range that's in the NFL that has that level of stardom? And can they even get there at this point? Or have things changed so much that even if you win and you last for a while?
I don't see it right now to that level, because Cam Newton is a star, but he's not to their level.
He's also more polarizing than
any will never be at their level. But he is a star. I mean, he is a face of a franchise. I mean, he is a – he's in the top 10, right?
Oh,
most recognizable players in the NFL, for sure. But he's not in that group. You're asking, is somebody like the young guys, the Carson Wentz, all these guys that we know, Mariota, Winston, Deshaun Watson, it's a small sampling. I mean, still very, very – I'm not willing to jump on the, oh, my goodness, he's the next guy going into Canton, because he's done it for, what, 10 games? I mean, it's a small sampling. He's got to do it over and over and over again. He's got to do it whenever defenses figure him out and what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are and his tendencies, and they're going to make life difficult for him. Is there somebody like that right now in the league? I don't see it. I think right now probably NASCAR is facing that, right?
Yep.
Because you just had their biggest name go out. Dale Jr.'s gone.
Yep.
He's their biggest draw. You've had other guys already leave.
Carl Edwards went out, Jeff Gordon.
Right.
Those are guys that when you saw their car and when you saw their face, I think even the casual fan knew them. I don't know. I mean, when you look at Ricky Stenhouse and some of these younger guys, if you're not a diehard NASCAR fan, can you tell me what number car they're driving? Can you spot them walking down the hallway here and be like, there he is, you know? I just don't know if you can do that anymore. And I think that's happening a little bit in the NFL as well. But I wonder how much of that is because of the people. You know, clearly Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, they were special at what they did. They're special personalities to go along with it. But is that also just kind of the era we're in? Was there a time where we were just more focused on those guys and we, you know, the TV ratings for everything were higher? Are we just more scatterbrained or not as focused on those things? Are we never going to have that era again where we have, you know, transcendent stars like a Peyton Manning?
Well, you tell me. I mean, just think about your question. Go up and down the league. I mean, there's no one in Buffalo, Miami, New York, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Jacksonville, Tennessee.
Ben Roethlisberger's probably in a – I mean
– He's Cam Newton.
Right.
He's in that tier.
He has a polarizing presence about him, so he's not universally beloved like those other guys. But in terms of stardom, I think if you put Ben Roethlisberger's face in front of people, just about everybody knows him, just like
right.
Cam.
Right, we're trying to, like
– somebody who's worth $10 million
Rodgers,
to a network.
Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, they garner ratings. Like, people will tune in just to watch them play. I'm not sure if you're tuning into the Steelers game just to see Roethlisberger. You may want to see Le'Veon Bell. You may want to see Antonio Brown. I'm just – Phillip Rivers, once again, great, but, you know, Oakland, Denver, Philly, I said Wentz, is he that – you know, Dallas, I think we
saw
without Ezekiel Elliott. And
well, Dak Prescott maybe has a shot, but, again, you got to see more.
But without Ezekiel Elliott, you know, this year it didn't look as great.
No.
Washington, the Giants, Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago. I mean, who?
Matt Ryan have a chance in Atlanta? I mean, he's not there yet by any means.
Yeah, I mean.
Russell Wilson, Seattle. Again, I don't think he's
on. Do you tune in for Russell Wilson?
I don't think he's on that level yet, but he's won a Super Bowl. He's been to another one. He's certainly been front and center in our thoughts for quite some time here.
What about Jimmy G? Jimmy G fever.
He's played half a season.
I know.
You know?
But
I mean, so what we just did is we named off about six guys who have the potential, if everything falls right for them, to maybe move into that super. But they're just not there yet.
No.
And so you talk about those guys at the top, and I think it's led by Peyton just because he's He comes from football royalty.
Yep.
You knew Peyton before he – you know, you didn't know Drew Brees before – certainly before he got to Purdue, but for a lot of people, probably before he even got into the NFL and started to put up some of the numbers he did. Peyton Manning, the worldwide conscience knew Peyton Manning yep. before he played a snap at Tennessee because he was Archie Manning's son.
Yeah, we weren't watching Cal Bears games when Aaron Rodgers was under center.
No.
Now, I realize in this market – but – Peyton Manning was huge for college football. Everybody knew Peyton Manning at UT.
Yeah. I wasn't here when Peyton Manning was at Tennessee, but I knew of Peyton Manning at Tennessee.
Drew Brees
and I was
at
watching it, and I was amazed just like everybody else, they didn't win the Heisman in his senior year. Yeah. You know, Peyton Manning was in our consciousness before he ever got to the National Football League, and then he got to the National Football League and he put up record numbers in two different spots, and he won Super Bowls in two different spots, and all of that to me is what sets Peyton apart. Is it was more than 20 years where he was in the national consciousness of just football elites, and he's still there even though he's not playing anymore.
So we would say, just going through the list that we just did out loud, the ones that have the best shot, and we're not even saying any of these guys really have a shot. What, Jimmy G? Deshaun Watson, small sampling. Matt Ryan probably has the best shot, right?
Yeah.
Because he's already been to a Super Bowl. If he could get him back again or even a couple more times. Russell Wilson, I mean, that's not a whole lot to
– I would put Wilson and Ryan sort of at the top of that list. And that would be if we're excluding Cam Newton and Roethlisberger and sort of saying they're just different categories. And, again, I go back to the polarizing fact. I think they've done enough things that have been controversial, or in Ben's case, possibly illegal in their lifetime, that they will never have the approval rating or be as universally beloved as a guy like a Peyton Manning. They just won't, no matter what they do. Even if they both win two or three Super Bowls in a row here in the next decade, they won't have that level of stardom that he had, just because they've had other things detract from it. Now, those other guys you mentioned, the Wilson and Ryan, if they went on a run like that, perhaps they could elevate themselves into that, but that's asking a lot. I mean, you're asking multiple Super Bowls or multiple more MVPs or things like that, and I don't know if they or anybody else that we've named have that potential.
Yeah. Let's go to Mitch. Mitch, what's up?
I think we need to look at this different, not even from a talent standpoint. I think there's some talent in the league that would match Brady or Manning in the coming years. But with Brady and Manning and even Brees and Rodgers, they came in kind of in the beginning of social media, instead of, you know, learning and seeing everything about these guys every day. We kind of got to watch them grow on the field, and I think that's what helped with their stardom now. I mean, you're in the league for 4 years, and we know everything inside and out, all your flaws, all your good benefits, and we move on as soon as the next thing comes in. They're not even going to have a chance to grow into a Manning or a Brady or a Ross.
You know what?
That's a good point.
It is a good point. So who would you put, Mitch, in that way he left? You know who we didn't even bring up? This is how weird this dynamic is right now. Think about the guy we didn't even mention that would have been probably – the first person we mentioned, but was never even brought up in the conversation. Andrew Luck. Didn't even bring him up.
Yeah.
That's how weird.
That's what happens when you fall
is.
Off the map for a year or so.
With there's so much uncertainty.
Right.
We don't know. I mean, Andrew Luck is the logical choice.
Well, he was supposed to be the next Elway, right? He was supposed to be the next can't miss guy. And now, unfortunately, injuries, you don't know what's next for him. You don't know how long this lasts or what this is. I do think the social media part is a good one, and there's not much mystery out there anymore.
No.
You know, when Peyton Manning was at Tennessee, you just kind of saw this guy who played college football, and he was Archie's kid. And frankly, even as good as the numbers as he was putting up from afar, and again, I didn't live in Tennessee at the time that he played for the Vols, but from afar – I still sort of knew him as Peyton Manning, Archie's kid. And he was putting up monster numbers, and I thought he should have won the Heisman, but I didn't really know Peyton Manning. And then he gets into the NFL, and you start to see more of him and all those sort of things, and you start to feel like you know him a little bit. But it was like a decade-long process in the NFL to feel like you really knew who Peyton Manning was. And he's not a guy that tweets all the time. I don't even know if he has a Twitter.
No,
but
he does.
You know, so he keeps – well, he's very front and center, and he did the Papa John's things and all that and made his money and was great at endorsing things. He's kept a level of a private profile to himself that brings some allure as well. Some of these other guys that are just front and center, I mean, even Russell Wilson, my example, I think, has a chance. But I see Russell Wilson tweeting about his love for Ciara all the time. And there's not a problem with that. That's certainly part of what today's age is. But there's less intrigue to me about Russell Wilson because I feel like I know what he's doing. I know his wife, seemingly, through Twitter. I know all these other things about him, where he's going, where he's vacationing, and all that.
What spring training camp he's going to be at?
I know he's taking at-bats with the Yankees. I'm not clamoring for more Russell Wilson. I think the public is clamoring for more Peyton Manning. He would be wildly popular if he came back to the booth.
Yeah, Will Rabb on Twitter says Fox wants Peyton to do the Thursday night package. Remember, Fox now
right.
is part of the – that makes sense.
Yeah.
But those games, those games usually traditionally are crappy.
Well, but if you're looking –
most of them.
If you're looking for ratings, though, because those have dipped over the last couple years, where at first it was like, hey, you can throw NFL football on any day, any time slot you want, and the ratings will be massive – the Thursday night ratings have gone down over the last couple of years because I think the public is kind of learning that, hey, some of the stars aren't playing because they can't turn around from Sunday. The product isn't as good as what we're used to on Sunday. You know how you fix that? You put Peyton Manning in the booth.
I don't even think even Peyton could fix Buffalo and Cleveland Thursday night football.
If it's the first game he ever does, I guarantee you those ratings will be
no
good.
No one could fix that matchup.
You can't fix the product on the field, but the broadcast can be better.
Yeah. We'll come back and wrap up the hour. We'll head to St. Louis. Julian Council is there at the SEC tournament. Two games in the books last night. Vanderbilt falls to Georgia and South Carolina in a squeaker wins the nightcap over Ole Miss by a point. So all the action, second round action today starts at noon with Texas A&M taking on Alabama. This is a huge game for Alabama. We'll talk to Julian Council there at the SEC tournament. We'll do that next on 102.5 The Game.
Green Sally up, last gun start, gotta tell the crown. Green Sally up, green Sally down.
The selection show is on Sunday. Next week will be the NCAA tournament. We know it will be here. Two rounds right here at Bridgestone Arena. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman alongside News Channel 5. So that means it's time for you to sign up for the official 102.5 The Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Go to the GameNashville.com. Sign up today. You could win a PlayStation 4 Pro. And if you have the perfect bracket, it'll be worth $1 million. Again, sign up at GameNashville.com. Get in there and get ready to do your brackets. Our SEC tournament correspondent, Julian Council, is in St. Louis at the Scott Trade Center. Julian, how you doing?
Hello?
Hello,
Julian.
Hey, I got you guys. What's going on? I was about to walk into the media entrance, and my signal went away, so I will step back outside into the 30-degree weather. What's going on?
Nashville to Julian. Over. So is it snowing?
Here.
Is it snowing in St. Louis?
I saw a slight little snowflakes last night. No buildup, but it's way too cold for March, and I didn't know Missouri was this cold. First time in Missouri, and I'm not exactly pleased about the weather.
Oh, well, we could have given you the heads up on that.
Yeah, it actually isn't very warm here today either, but I think people would be disappointed in the Nashville weather for the SEC tournament. But St. Louis is remarkably cold.
There was snow on my back porch this morning.
Oh, great.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, got a little bit of snow. So, Vanderbilt last night, they lose to Georgia. Their season is over. We talked to Bryce Drew on Tuesday. Just a tough year for the Commodores. They got their first road win to finish out the regular season. But I'll tell you what, Georgia is going to be a tough – if it wasn't for it being Missouri being their opponent today, and that'll be the 2:30 this afternoon game, I would say Georgia could be a scary team. But, you know, because Missouri's going to have the fans, they've got the built-in storyline of Michael Porter Jr. coming back, it's going to be tough for them. But that – Georgia looked really good last night.
Yeah, I walked into the building, and Vanderbilt's down 25 in the second half. So I was like, oh, well, it's great to be here. Vandy, nothing has changed with you guys. But, yeah, it's disappointing to see them have a season like they had. You know, Bryce Drew just talked about how Matthew Fisher-Davis going out really hurts them defensively, and then, you know, having Riley Chance, Jeff Roberson being there to carry the team last 2 months really laid a foundation for guys like Saban Lee that they can carry on when they get that five-star recruiting class next year. But, you know, Georgia, the interesting thing is they only played Mizzou once. They played at Mizzou Arena back in January, and Yonte Maton, who was voted the Associated Press's SEC Player of the Year, had his worst game of the season by far, only had 9 points in that game and a double-digit loss. So it's interesting to see how he'll be affected by Michael Porter Jr. coming back today, because Mizzou already defended him well in the first game. And then Mark Fox, Georgia's head coach, last night was talking about the press conference. His concern over Michael Porter Jr. returning is he has no idea what position he's going to play because of how versatile of a player he is. He can step back, hit three, he can take it off the bounce. Obviously, he can post you up at 6'11". So Georgia trying to match up with him will be interesting. How many minutes he plays, we're not quite sure. Yeah, the Bulldogs have a pretty tough task at hand playing Michael Porter Jr. And, of course, it should probably be a sellout crowd here on the Thursday in Missouri.
From what I've been able to, I guess, sift through, it sounds like about half the game, 20, 22 minutes, something like that. Are you hearing that?
I haven't gotten in here yet, so I will talk to the Mizzou people once I do. I'm not really sure, but I would imagine they would want to get him in there for about half the game, just, you know, try and get sea legs under him before they move on to the NCAA tournament, because if he hadn't played, I don't think that they would have played him at all in March, you know, for the NCAA tournament. So I would imagine they would want to get like about 15, 20, 25 minutes tops with him tonight.
What do you think is realistic for him to be a factor? How much do you think, or are they even, I mean, they had a good season without him, and we know what's interesting. Anybody thinks this is going to be awkward because he's only played 2 minutes this year. Remember, his dad is an assistant coach. His brother is on the team, who was the sixth man of the year in the conference. So it's not like he's, you know, he hasn't been around. I mean, he's walking into a very, very comfortable situation with all that
right.
being said. I guess how much do you think that they will rely on him, or will they, to kind of help them beat Georgia today?
Yeah, going preseason, the offense was built around him. So the fact that Mizzou has had to go this whole season without him, not fans 2 minutes of him playing against Iowa State the first night, it's been impressive the job Collins Martin's done. I would expect pretty much nothing out of Michael Porter Jr. I think the lowest of bars you can have for him is what should be set today, because this is a guy, yeah, we know he's super talented, but he hasn't played with this team. This team's played 30-plus games without him this season. They've turned themselves into a 20-win NCAA tournament team without him. So expecting him to come in here and have 20 and 15 or whatever would just be completely unfair for him. And if any NBA scouts out here and they see him have a bad game and they don't want to draft him because he had one bad game in the SEC tournament and Mizzou loses, that scout's probably going to get fired in the next couple of years anyway, because they have no idea what basketball is. He's a good player, but to expect him to come out here and to put Missouri over the top would be just completely unfair, and I'd be shocked if he's able to come out here and have a great game.
Julian, we've talked about Missouri a fair amount over the last couple of days, and I think they're the obvious answer here for the Thursday team because of the crowd, because of Porter coming back, about having a chance to make a run this weekend. But besides Missouri, who's the team you're most looking forward to watching today and believe has the chance to make some noise this weekend in St. Louis?
I wrote about this morning on thegamenational.com. I think it's Texas A&M. They play the first game today here in about an hour against Alabama, an Alabama team that has to get a win if they're going to want to play in the NCAA tournament. I think they were about the third team out, according to Joe Lunardi this morning in his latest bracketology. But A&M's a team that was, what, top five when SEC play started. They had the blowout win against West Virginia, a West Virginia team that has not exactly played up to its standards this season. But A&M has a ton of talent. Tyler Davis is a first-team All-SEC player. Robert Williams was co-defensive player of the year alongside Chris Bill with South Carolina. He could have been a lottery pick last year. He's still probably a projected first-rounder this year. And losing Dwayne Wilson at point guard hurts them, but T.J. Starks has come in, the freshman guard. He's played really well. So if Starks can keep his head straight, he got thrown out of the game on Saturday for pushing Colin Sexton's head, which is a technical foul, got him thrown out. But if he can just, you know, stay under control, get the ball to DJ Hogue on the outside and hit knock down some threes, I think A&M has a talented experience to go out here and win a few games here, if not cut down the nets in St. Louis.
Totally agree. I think A&M's a team that can make a run throughout the course of this weekend. I don't particularly think either of the two teams, LSU and Mississippi State, who are playing tonight, who will then face Tennessee tomorrow, I don't particularly think either one of them is a big threat to Tennessee. Do you agree or disagree on that?
Mississippi State is a non-threat. They have to win tonight or their season's basically NIT back. I don't see them beating LSU, a team that just beat them by 21 last Saturday in Baton Rouge. I think LSU actually could be a threat to Tennessee, despite, you know, they've been blown out. But this is a team that does have some quality wins this season. I think they have like 5 or 6 quadrant one wins. And Tremont Waters, one of the best freshmen in the SEC. Duop Reese has probably been the most improved player in the SEC. They're kind of stretch four. I like LSU to win that game tonight. I don't think they can beat Tennessee, but if Tennessee's going to be concerned about any team, it would probably be LSU because I don't see Mississippi State being able to actually give the Vols a run after getting blown out a week ago back in Starkville.
Julian, I got a couple rapid-fire teams off of yesterday and based off of what they did that I want to find out, you know, just sort of quick one-word answers if you think they're in or out of the tournament based off of games yesterday. Louisville's win over Florida State. Are the Cards now in?
Out.
Out. Notre Dame's win over Virginia Tech coming back from 21 down in the second half.
Still out.
Still out. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. That game almost looked like a play-in game to me. Are the Cowboys in and the Sooners now out?
Sooners in, Cowboys still out.
Wow. Still going at it. Is there anything that can happen to knock Oklahoma out at this point?
I don't think so. Oklahoma, yeah, they have not played well over the last month of the season, but when you look at the losses that they have, they lost to all teams that are going to be into the late tournament team. Oklahoma State still has a chance. If they can win probably another game there, wherever the Big 12 tournament's played, that they can get in. They have to sweep over Kansas. So Oklahoma doesn't have any bad losses. Yeah, they haven't played well recently. You look at the RPI, you look at the wins that they do have, and you look at their losses. It's going to be far better than when you look at a Notre Dame that lost to Ball State and Indiana back when Bonzi Colson was healthy before he broke his foot. So when you compare that resume to compare to Oklahoma's, Oklahoma's is still a better resume than Notre Dame.
11 okay. to 15 losses, though.
Here's your homework assignment because Mississippi State plays in the nightcap. When you talk to folks from Mississippi State, find out if Ben Howland's going to take the job if he's going back to Pittsburgh. Kevin Stallings is out at Pittsburgh, and it'll be easy to connect the dot of Ben Howland going back to Pittsburgh. See if there's any truth to it.
I don't think that's going to happen. Ben Howland's already built a pretty good program down there in Starkville. Like every year, every third year he's had a program, so it's been Northern Arizona, Pittsburgh, UCLA. He's won 21-plus games. He's done that down there in Starkville. I don't think he wants to go start over again at Pittsburgh when the cupboard is so bare and you're going to go in the ACC. I don't know if he wants any part of that.
Well, I'm just but I will see if there's any truth to it. I didn't say it was going to happen. I'm just saying that'll be an easy dot for people to connect.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Hey, good stuff. Enjoy the tournament. We'll talk to you a little bit later.
All right. Take care, guys.
Our SEC tournament correspondent, Julian Council, in St. Louis at the Scott Trade Center. Texas A&M and Alabama, that is the first game in the second round today. That will tip at noon. We'll come back. We'll head over to the campus at Lipscomb. Their AD, Philip Hutchison, will join us. We'll talk about what this, their ticket getting punched in the NCAA tournament, what it means to that campus. We'll do that next on 102.5 The Game.